Getty acquired us in 1996, but the archive's been here since 88 when we bought it from the BBC. It was the BBC Radio Times Halton Pitch Library. Yeah. So the Halton name has really carried on right from the very beginning in 1938 when Picture Post magazine launched. And that's really where we have our roots, is that publication and Edward Halton's publishing empire. So although he's a brand now, he was a real person.
Yes.
So this is, as I said, the TARDIS effect. This is our main print warehouse. You'll get a different answer from everyone you ask. I say 60 million images on site here, but we've never really been able to count them all, and there's more and more coming in all the time. We've just had to build another floor to take a collection. This is what we consider the oldest part of the library in one way, and this is where the core library started off with Picture Post magazine. And the library was started off in 1947 at the end of the Second World War, and then Edward Halton started buying in other collections, so sometimes individual photographers' collections, like Sasha, who was a society and theatrical photographer in the 1920s, 30s and 40s, and whole Fleet Street collections, because Fleet Street started to kind of decline in the 1950s and 1960s. So we've just been growing since then. The library was classified by a chap called Gibbs Smith, Charles Gibbs Smith, and he divided it into four sections. Behind you we have people portraits, so Tilly the Hun through to King's Orga, and Picasso beaten in here. And on this side we have M for modern subjects, accidents through to zoology. And really you can find pretty much any subject matter you like in here. Upstairs we have topographical, which is places around the world.
That's an extraordinary classification, modern.
Modern, yes.
Well, I mean, what does that mean, 20th century events? Or?
Well, yes, it's modern subjects, and modern 1920 onwards was taken as the point of modern photojournalism,
right,
because Picture Post associated itself very much with modern photojournalism. They used the small format camera, which most of the press, British press, weren't doing on Fleet Street with 35mm 2.25 film. So that's where our modern section comes from, and we also have a historical section as well, which also includes non-photographic material. So we have illustrations, postcards, maps, tea cards, music scores, anything really that you can think of, material dating back to the 17th century. Just illustrative material. We're not just about photography, although it's obviously what we're known for.
So the move from being a picture collection that's served an individual publication to being an archive, was a conscious decision to become a collector?
I think I think Edward Halton saw the value. He had a stable of magazine titles. It wasn't just Picture Post. So he had everything from Farmers Weekly through to Dan Dare and Girl and Robin magazines in Halton Press. So some of the photographers, Picture Post photographers, would be sort of working on other publications as well. But he also realised, as with most of the Fleet Street agencies, that you could license to other people as well. So he saw the value in collecting photography. And as I say, there were more and more collections coming up for sale in the 40s and 50s.
So how is the building divided up?
Well, in actual fact, what I just showed you was the core Halton collection, which is current to about 1960 when Halton Press was split up. This is the Evening Standard Express collection. Behind us in the boxes is Keystone, which was three Fleet Street press agencies and a New York agency. So they have a sports section, there's a 20th century war section.
It's interesting that you maintain the classification of the original archives.
Yes, well, it's just because the library has grown up, as I say, since 1938, so we're 70, 80 years of collecting, and to try and amalgamate all of that 60 million prints or 30 million prints, whatever it is, into one system would just be an impossible task for us. Simply upstairs, the topographical section that we have was classified in 1947. So if you're looking for Kendal, which is my hometown, you have to know, obviously now it's in Cumbria, but back then was it Cumberland, Westmorland or Lancashire? You know, just to even update that every time a county changes its boundary or a country changes its name would just keep us occupied. So we can't do it. And it does mean for our researchers, less than 1% of this is digitised on our website. So we have a deep file research team here who answer requests from around the globe, all of our overseas offices and agents and clients. You know, there's no one place to look for Churchill. There's Churchill in the Halton Files, Churchill in Evening Standard and Express, Churchill in Keystone. Then upstairs we have American archives when we acquired archive photos from the States. So FPG, archive photos. Yeah.
It's a labyrinthine.
Absolutely. Absolutely. This is the student riots in 1968. Obviously, we work on anniversaries. So as official photographers for the Olympics in 2012, as the archive, we're supporting that by going back through all of our files. We can actually go back to the first modern Olympics in 1896, but of course we have good coverage from 1908 and 1948 in London. So we'll have mined all of that. You know, 68 with the student riots in 2008, you would go back over all of those great events. And we try and look forward about 18 months to look for anniversaries that are coming up. The Titanic, of course, is going to be another one for us for 2012. And also, it sounds a bit gruesome and morbid, but it's how the news works. We also work on our obituaries in advance. So we're working on material like that, if something's not looking very well.
Yes, this box that you've just opened here, of what does it say on the outside? It says France, Politics, France, Protest, Students, 1968. To my eyes, that looks completely undifferentiated mixture of prints. Am I missing something? Is there any way of sorting out? I mean, how many? There's maybe 200 photographs in there?
What you have in here is a mixture of prints from different collections. So this is a Central Press print, but we'll also have Keystone in here as well. And some of these might have been submitted through the French agencies that they had deals with at the time. So, yes, where we have a negative, you'll be able to track it back to the warehouse next door. Hopefully the negative will still exist and we'll still have it.
It is an amazing spectacle just how much material there is. Who is allowed in here, by the way?
It's by appointment only, so bona fide researchers who want to do their own research, who don't want to come through our team here, they can come in and do their own research. I specifically work also with students, curators and historians who might not be licensing material, but of course, say for Picture Post magazine, this is the archive, we own it, you can't get it anywhere else, you can't get that access, so we do have a duty of care to make it available to bona fide researchers.
Yes. Do you want to show me some more?
Yes, absolutely. Let's carry on.
The thrill of wandering around obviously hasn't left you.
Well, no, it's a bit strange considering I've been here probably about 14 years or something. It's a little cooler in here, you'll notice.
Yes.
Both the warehouses are temperature and humidity controlled. The negatives prefer a slightly cooler temperature to the print warehouse, just for conservation purposes. There's about 5 miles of glass shelving on the ground floor that you can see here, and it's all glass plate negative. So this is one of our earliest photographic collections, London Stereoscopic Collection, through to the larger plate sizes from the late 19th century.
Well, that's extraordinary.
I know, it's wonderful, isn't it? Again, this is London Stereoscopic, but we think from the flags, this is one where we're not quite sure, we think from the flags it's something to do with the Spanish-American War, so that would date it to about 1898. So that's, again, America and Cuba not getting on. But a fantastic, the glass is wonderful to print from as well. If you go and speak to the darkroom boys, they'll tell you, because obviously it's a 10-8 negative. There's no grain in this. They just print absolutely beautifully. They're a wonderful, wonderful thing to have.
It's amazing that so much of it is glass.
What I find amazing is the British press were using glass plate negatives until the 1960s.
Mm.
We have a very famous image of Roger Bannister crossing the line on the 4-minute mile, which was taken in 1954 by Norman Potter, glass plate. They didn't like the what they call toy cameras, the 35mm cameras. So they would go out with their job bags with a dozen plates and maybe covering two or three jobs and have to get the picture in two or three shots. It's absolutely phenomenal that they did that. And you think that's from 1960, in 40 years we've now gone from that to digital.
Mm.
Whereas, as I say, I think all of our photographers, with one or two exceptions, shoot digitally now.
What makes this collection so different? Is it just that you are the only place to go and get it, or?
We're not the only place to go and get it. You know, Corbis has this kind of material, Magnum has material going back, you know, from when their inception in the 1950s. So obviously, I think we're probably the largest archive anywhere, I dare say that. But I think also, you know, as I say, we're very proactive with what we're doing with our material, and we're always trying to bring it up to date and make it relevant to people, because that's the only way that you're going to sell it. Part of that is the stereoscopic collection, which nobody's been interested in for 100 years, and suddenly, you know, we've got 3D TV. Our photographers will be shooting at the 2012 in stereo. We've got two photographers shooting in stereo there. And suddenly documentary makers, TV programmers are coming and thinking, stereo is going to be big, 3D TV could be big, so we might well be getting those boxes out, opening them up, and scanning stereo material, which is quite exciting.
That's amazing. It's amazing to think that stereo photographs would suddenly become.
I know. Those bits of old glass that other people were throwing away. You know, that's it. So you never know the value of a photograph until somebody asks for it. But you just never know when somebody's going to ask for it.
So your editorial staff, they're searching for material on the basis of your forward planning roster. Is there also a kind of deeper, just generally we're going to try and look at everything?
It's a nice idea, but there's just too much. There's too much to do that. We have to target areas and subject matters to do that, because if you just started here and, say, started digitising, there's a cost, obviously, to everything. So you've got the research time, the scanning, captioning and keywording. That cost has to be recouped, so we're only really going to be putting material up that we think is going to sell. Because if you scan 60 million images, even if it only costs you a dollar to scan everything, it's going to cost you $60 million, you know, if half of those don't sell.
And the scanning is probably even less important than the captioning and the information that is going to...
No, absolutely not. Every part of the process is vital to getting the best image, the best quality image to the client. We have our own team down here who do scanning in-house. We do outsource some of our scanning, but of course the glass plate negatives, the old fragile material, can't go out of house. So that team are working. We do a certain amount of retouching to the images, but we have an editorial policy where we don't do anything other than cropping and sort of cosmetic retouching, taking out scratches and thumbprints, those sorts of things. But we would never change the image, obviously. And we want to get the best quality scan to our clients, and the same for the metadata, because however brilliant an image is, if you can't find it, if it's missing that keyword, then it's no use either. So all parts of that process, from the selection, the knowledge and the skill of our editors, through to, you know, the skill of our scanners and our captioning team, is I think equally important.
What are the earliest collections here then? The stereoscopic, London stereoscopic.
Company. London stereoscopic in this warehouse, the Neg warehouse. Yes, London stereoscopic is one of our earliest collections. So that dates from about 1854. As I say, we have those stereoscopic negatives, William England, William Grundy, who were both shooting in the 1850s. And that goes through to about 1922. And then just other collections, Rishkits again. We have all formats of negatives, from early wet plate collodions to dry gelatin plates from the 1880s, as I say, through to film formats, modern film format. We've got a conservation department and a vintage room here as well. We're quite unique. I guess my role's unique, in a commercial archive as curator. But we also have Lenny, our star weapon, who's just brilliant. And he's a photographic conservator, very rare in itself for somebody to be specialising in photography. He trained with Camberwell, his master's in paper conservation. He's absolutely fantastic, because, as I say, a lot of the material is original and it goes back to the 19th century. So we have massive problems with conservation just because of the scale of the library. You know, every image ought to be sleeved. It ought to be in a perfect silver sleeve. Every box needs replacing, theoretically, and with conservation grade materials rather than just the boxes that the press put them in back in 1943.
So the majority of what's here is in its original housing?
A lot of it is, yes. Yeah.
You must have had some systematic process of trying to deal with the things that are in immediate danger, or
we target our nitrate collections are all stored out of house with the British Film Institute. They had a massive funding to rebuild all of their storage facilities. So in actual fact, we had to bring the nitrate in last year and repackage it for zero temperature. So we basically did thermal wrapping on that entire collection, which was over 60,000 negatives, mainly Sasha. But because obviously we don't have insurance to have nitrate in house, and then we're targeting other parts of the collection. Acetate is a problem for us, as it is for everyone. It's reaching its shelf life, acetate film stock. the glass plate negatives, we're now, with this renewed interest in stereoscopic, we're reboxing a lot of the London stereoscopic and re-sleeving that, because it's a very, very important historical collection as well as a commercial one for us as well.
Why do you keep collecting when you've got such a hoard of...
Well, we don't have everything.
Right.
So we're working probably increasingly with contributors and image partners. We do occasionally buy collections, but it's really to fill our content gap. So we're constantly monitoring, for example, on the website, what clients are asking for, and they're getting their hits back and we can't supply them. So we have feedback from our sales teams and our research teams on that. So
what are you missing?
Well, gosh, I think we've got a very good breadth of a lot of things and a lot of depth in certain areas, so it's really adding depth to some things. So one thing that we've tackled in the last 5 years is our music collections, which kind of were a bit patchy and kind of ran out in the 1970s, 1980s. We've taken on a couple of collections, Michael Oakes Archive in the States and also David Redfern's Music Archive, as a basis for our music collections. And we now have signed, actually, we've got a lot of photographers signed who are shooting music for us now as well from those collections. And we're also looking, obviously we're a global company, so we're looking at new markets and emerging markets. So we're obviously targeting local content. So Europe is a big market for us, Germany and France and Spain. So we'll be looking for content we can add in those areas. And then, of course, China and India, which are big emerging markets. We want to have content there for them as well. So we're looking to fill those kind of geographical gaps as well.
Would you still buy any collections in the UK?
Our acquisition policy depends on all sorts of things, but the key one is it a gap for us, I think, because we have such great content from the UK, from Britain. That's not saying we wouldn't look at something, but there's no point just buying things to reproduce what we've got. You know, so it's all done on a case-by-case basis.